CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. As a campus and community station, CJSF strives to provide points of view that are rarely expressed on mainstream media. This includes music that is not the top 40 and news you will not find on the big media outlets. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca. Just a bend in time.
And how does it feel together? You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
And welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm your main host today, Tegan Marshall. I'm here with Aaron Wang, Mihai Kovasser, and Brandon, tell me what your last name is.
Brownlee.
Here at the Canadian Philosophy Show, we're starting up a whole new mini-series on the existential questions of life. No, just kidding. Technically, it's about existentialism in general, focusing on basically a few key authors, starting with Kierkegaard, going from there to Sartre, Heidegger, Thornton Wilder's Our Town, and whoever else pops into our minds as we go about this journey. Because, as Martin Heidegger would say, life itself is possibility. Human existence is possibility. So, folks, are you ready to dive into the possibilities of this brand new miniseries? For those who don't know kind of what existentialism is, at least in my individual experience, because this is what kind of separates existentialism from a variety of different philosophical disciplines, I will make the case that existentialism is meant to be an individual study of the world in which someone inhabits versus a more moral, ethical, philosophical outlook that seeks to universalize concepts and experience to better a society. Although there is definite value in trying to understand the universal aspects of existentialism, existentialism itself came out of the recognition, as Friedrich Nietzsche would write, that God is dead. What does that mean, God is dead? Well, it means that we as humanity no longer have some alternative authority that is overarching to blame or to make atonement for our failures. It is up to the human person to strive through and create the world in which they want to see. It is this question of how do we respond to the Nietzschean claim of God being dead, of which existentialism or the study of existence comes into play. And so before I really get rolling and jump right in, I want to take some time for my colleagues to share their experience with existentialism and hear why they wanted to join on this mini-series. Why don't we start with our good friend Mihai?
Sure thing, I can jump in there. So I think existentialism is something that people poke around with at some point almost inevitably if they have any interest in philosophy whatsoever. Even if you don't, you might stumble upon thoughts that some of these authors have had and have formally written. And, you know, I think it's a worthwhile endeavor as far as characterizing your own experience with yourself and with the world around you and being able to articulate that experience and how that feels and what the results or what the outcomes of such a relationship might be. Personally, I was talking just before the show started about a course I took in History of Political Thought, in which I read Kierkegaard. We read his Fear and Trembling, which I thought was a great piece, and it sparked an interest for me in that relationship, especially between man and God, or whatever people consider to be God, as Nietzsche would say, you know, as an authority figure, especially. I think that's a really interesting thing to study. So anyways, without further ado, I'll pass it on. But that's sort of where I'm leading on this, is I think that'll be an interesting question to tackle. And I quite like Kierkegaard. So
my, I guess, experience with existentialism comes mostly in the form of Heidegger. Most of the existentialism that I've read is Heidegger, and I've read him, I don't want to say deeply, but I have gone through Being in Time a bit. So when we get to those points, I think that will be interesting to kind of draw out my own readings. But specifically about, more about the existentialist sort of movement or philosophy itself, one of the things that I find important about the existential, like, again, mindset or philosophy, is that it's our condition. We find ourselves in a particular time, in a particular set of plausibilities about the way the world is, and existentialism is an attempt to address what seems plausible and what isn't. I mean, you raise correctly that for us, God is dead. No longer is this like a, this isn't a plausible claim. You can't frame the world in terms of a totalizing anything, but specifically a totalizing authority figure or moral figure. We have to cope with that situation. And if we're going to do that, it's going to be through the work that's been done in this particular area.
I will just warn you on the claim of saying that we cannot. Maybe many people do not, but it's dangerous in the philosophical ring to say that we cannot frame the world that way. But anyways, I'm sure we'll get into that later.
There's already a scandal on the panel, folks, but we're going to bring back and hold back the raging seas, and we're going to go to Aaron real quick, and then I'll jump in here.
Yeah, so I don't really have a lot of formal understanding with existentialism. To me, it seems like it has introduced a lot of language that people find helpful to discussing their lives. Like when people talk about the human condition, or they talk about existential dread, or finding the meaning in their existence. Like these are questions and terms that I think are tied to existentialism, maybe not exclusively tied. But I think that the movement and its effects in the modern day are something that everyone can appreciate. So, yeah, I'm pretty ignorant going into this. So I'll be leaning very heavily on my colleagues for their expertise in the subject.
Well, excellent, because acknowledging that you're ignorant is the first sign of wisdom, right? What did Socrates do but say, I know nothing? And that's why the oracle declared him, albeit second-handedly through a friend, that Socrates is the wisest man in all of Athens. But we're going forward in time. We're being thrust into a godless world in the pursuit of existentialism. So let us begin. I've heard existentialism be described as the kind of cheesy, kind of movie-ish version of philosophy that everyone thinks of when they hear the word philosophy. This brooding individual that's like, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to live? What does it mean to exist? But part of the reason I wanted to engage in this mini-series is because existentialism is the reason I remain in philosophy to this day. Existentialism seeks to get to the root of what it is to be a human creature within the world, right? And Brandon, Aaron, and Mihai have all touched on the term the human condition. One of the first questions that I was posed in my first existentialism course was, what do I make of Jean-Paul Sartre's claim that there is no human nature, merely a human condition, right? And It is understanding the human condition, what binds us together as humanity, that then allows the existentialist this opportunity to step out and explore who they are within individuality. So within this course, we'll be looking at a lot of thinkers with a lot of powerful insights into the human condition, how we look, how we study existence. And then when we get to Thornton Wilder in particular, we'll be talking about a play that he wrote to demonstrate the importance of stepping out and discovering who you are as an individual within a framework. So existentialism for me was that opportunity to say, who am I? What does it mean to be human? Particularly because I also have a physical disability. How do I make sense of that experience and how I relate to others? Right? The existentialist is concerned with who they are. They are not only concerned with who they are currently, they are concerned with making a life, as Aaron stated, that is meaningful, that has impact, that changes, that allows them to move forward, right? Does not keep them, as Jean-Paul Sartre would say, forlorn, alone, and in despair. Those are the three characteristics of the human person, that they are thrust into a world and they are forlorn, they are alone, and they are in despair. So existentialism seeks to call the human being to awareness, call the human being to action, to make a life that is meaningful, impactful, and I think Heidegger would say this more in his later works than Being in Time, but to make a life that is beautiful. So what are your thoughts on that, gentlemen?
I think what's interesting about this approach, so the reason I think that it's been made to seem cheesy or kitschy, or that it's been used so much in popular culture, is because it is such a pervasive question for most people. I think many, many people, if not most people, enter a point in their life when they wonder, what is going on? What is this all about? Why am I here? You know, what am I doing in this world? What is the world and who am I in it? Maybe not to the extent that we take it. I'd say we're maybe a little bit unique in our nerdiness in that respect. But no, I mean, seriously, I think a lot of people take that journey in their own way. And that's why it's such a popular thing to talk about, because a lot of people can relate to it. And I think that's our job as philosophers, or people who dive into this particular subject more deeply, is to see how far this thought train can take us, and then communicate that, whatever findings we make, back to other people who maybe don't want to or don't have the capacity to go on that journey for themselves. I'm excited to get to Kierkegaard for the reason that I think there's a couple of passages of Fear and Trembling, and there's a couple of moments there that I think really exemplify what we're talking about in terms of taking that dive within.
I just wanted to kind of respond to that, the commonality of people coming to this situation where they encounter a fundamental question, or a sort of, this is a different term, I don't think it's quite appropriate, but a sort of dark night of the soul where they really don't know what's going on and they're grappling with fundamental questions. I think one of the reasons that is so common now also is because we find ourselves in a particular condition that seems conducive of that question being raised. And that is to allude to the tie between existentialism and modernity. I'm not a historian, so I can't exactly say what that means, and maybe someone else can speak to that, but that seems to be one of the traits of existentialism, is it could have only happened when it did. It was a particular response to a historical condition.
Authors refer to what's called the existential moment, which is essentially the period in time following the Second World War and the atrocities that occurred therein. And I think many people at that point in history began to write and to question on what exactly we were doing to each other and to ourselves in that particular moment, and you know, what there are some ethical boundaries that seem to have been crossed that seemed pretty immovable up until that point. And it also has to do with a gradual, what we call, disenchantment of the world, in the sense that if you think back to the Greeks, I think I've talked about this on previous episodes, but you think back to the Greeks and the way they saw nature, everything imbued with the gods or with some kind of otherworldly extra human presence, that really does fade over the course of history, to a point where God dies in the end, as Nietzsche put it, and as Kierkegaard also put it, heavily criticizing modern Christianity for the way it tackles things. Again, that's sort of off topic, but yeah, I just wanted to offer some historical clarity to that from what I know.
So there's been a lot of good topics and subjects brought up here. I think what the existential moment shows us, as we begin to dive into existentialist thinkers, is the desire the desire and disillusionment of belonging to a bigger group of society. Because especially post-Second World War, we saw this major group of people commit nothing but atrocities, all in the name of political and ideological ideas that were just evil in nature and destructive. So the existentialist comes to a place where you become disillusioned that society itself has the best interest in mind. And so the existentialism comes out of a moment to discover who is humanity, but who am I within humanity? And it is Kierkegaard who comes to mind in terms of finding an outlet for community. Because Kierkegaard, in his leap of faith aspect of writing, posits that there are three states of life. And so there's the life of the ascetic that is based out of a fear of punishment. So you act as to avoid punishment. So your life is, this is how it was explained to me, as in terms of ethics. One of my professors explained it this way, that you act out of fear, out of necessity, rather than personal interest. Personal interest to benefit yourself, you strive to strictly survive. You have no community. You are alone. And then you, as you grow and you journey, you come to the life of the ethical. So you find community in the pursuit of ethics, right? There's lots of people that are attempting to, excuse me for one moment, to pursue ethics, but you're still fundamentally alone, because it's based upon your experiences, your interpretations of how ethics works. This is where Kierkegaard introduces the leap of faith, or the step of faith, that you take that step of faith and you enter the life of the religious person, and you empty yourself of all that you are for an infusion of divine grace, and you find community through relationship with the divine. That's Kierkegaard's case. Now, for the more cold and almost jaded existentialist like Sartre, he would say, "That's a bunch of garbage, and here's why." He would say, "That doesn't matter, because all there is you fundamentally. You can't be absorbed into other people. That's not what it is to live authentically." The existentialist was also primarily concerned with questions of not only existence, but at its core, authenticity. What does it mean to be authentic? What does it mean to be true? What does it mean to act authentically? And this is one of the interesting questions that we'll come back to time and time again in terms of the literature, right? Nietzsche's concept of the true philosopher that can be seen in his work Beyond Good and Evil, right? The true philosopher has immense power, has immense skills, but authenticity is required because Nietzsche says, and I'm paraphrasing, that the true philosopher, the person who embodies the true philosopher that understands what philosophy truly is, can either come too early or they can come too late. And so the practice of authenticity is being willing and ready to act authentically in accordance to who you are. So within this mini-series, we'll be dealing with existentialism itself, we'll be dealing with authenticity, we'll be touching on being, we'll be touching on how we respond in existentialism, and I'm sure there'll be many other side quests. As one of my colleagues pointed out in a class the other day, I said something and they were like, "Side quest unlocked." So I'm sure there'll be a couple side quests unlocked, but I think I would raise this question as a overarching question for this miniseries. The question is, what does authenticity actually mean? Does authenticity mean we just go with the flow and we just do whatever we want to do? Or is there some responsibility in authenticity? Is there somewhat of a moral aspect to authenticity? Because I would argue there is, but we will get there eventually. So we will start with Kierkegaard. And then we'll go to Nietzsche, then we'll go to Heidegger, then we'll go to our town, and we'll probably have a couple miniature stops along the way, because existentialism is wide and varied, but as a self-professed Heideggerian, I will endeavor to limit my Heideggerian biases so that we can look at all these texts and see what they have to offer us. So I don't know about you guys, but I'm excited to stop being forlorn, alone, and in despair, and find a community of individuals that are ready to pursue authenticity, pursue their existence, and maybe we'll finally get rid of that pesky existential dread we all have.
If you could do that for me, that would be great.
Yeah, right? It would be great if I could finally get rid of that myself.
Yeah, be careful what you propose for us, Tegan.
I know. So, but I think just because this is the overview episode, I think I will just outline some of the key aspects off the top of my head of the authors that we will be covering, so that our astute listeners can be ready and willing to engage. So, Soren Kierkegaard, good dude. He's considered the grandfather of existentialism. I look to him because he shows us three stages of life that we all go through at one point or another. Even if it isn't in his more traditional European Christian concept, right? As we grow up, we don't necessarily, we're not always acting as full rational moral agents. Sometimes we just don't do things because we don't want our parents to be mad at us, so we don't do those things. And then as we grow to be a little bit wiser, a little bit older, a little more life experience, we start to establish boundaries, and we start to establish right kind of limits and frameworks for how we navigate personal relationships, which would be in Soren Kierkegaard's case would be the life of the ethical. And then from there, we often come to a place where we come to a fork in the road, and we have to embrace our inner Robert Frost, right? And two roads diverged in the wood, and I took the road less traveled by, and that has made all the difference, right? We're at the fork in the road, so we kind of have to empty ourselves of any prior expectation and allow possibility itself to present itself to us. And then we're given the free choice, because for all existentialists, we are free moral agents. And to flee our freedom, as Sartre says, it's just a bad idea. You can't not be free. And with that freedom in mind, I want to take a moment to remind our listeners, you are listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I am your main host for today, Tegan Marshall, and we are having an overview episode to introduce our theory and mini-series on existentialism. And right off the jump, I'm going to hand it to our colleague, Mihai Kovasser.
Thanks. I just wanted to jump in here briefly on the tail end of sort of your overview of Kierkegaard to add a couple of points, if I may, that I think would be interesting to explore. Because you mentioned, you've talked a lot so far about this idea of finding community in some sense, no longer being alone, forlorn, as you said. And it's interesting because on the one hand, yes, Kierkegaard wants to see or wants to offer a method by which to bring about a sort of unification of sort of disjointed moments of our own life, of disjointed people, and sort of bring us together in a way that's cohesive, that's harmonious, because each one is acting rightly by his way of describing it. But I think what's most interesting about Kierkegaard to me, and I think what's really exemplified in Fear and Trembling, is the inward dive. And I think, as you said, individualism really plays a huge role in existentialism in general. I mean, as you say, a lot of these existentialists say that your experience, your subjectivity, your perspective on life, all of these things are of great importance to the process that you're and the journey that you're going on. That being said, I think, or rather with that said, there's a lot that Kierkegaard has to offer on what it means to be a knight of faith, as he calls it, what it means to gain faith, and how I think I would posit this in one of our discussions later on, that authority that was previously